This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. One of the most promising medical breakthroughs is also one of the most controversial, the transplanting of animal organs and cells into humans. Transplants from baboons, pigs, and other animals could save thousands of lives. About 10 Americans a day die while waiting for human organ donors. But grafting animal organs into humans may also bring risks. In fact, a group of doctors has called for a moratorium on these transplants, known as xenotransplants, until more is known about the possible risk of spreading animal viruses to people. We'll hear from one of those doctors later in the show. First, we're going to talk with Jeff Getty. 2 years ago, he received a bone marrow transplant from a baboon in the hopes that it would boost his immune system, which was knocked out by AIDS. He was the second person to receive this transplant. The first person died several days after the operation. Getty is an activist in the campaign to proceed with research on xenotransplants. Getty now serves on the board of Cellular Therapeutics at Allegheny University of Health Sciences. He participated in a xenotransplant panel discussion over the weekend at the annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. I asked Jeff Getty to describe his transplant.
2 years ago this winter, we put approximately 60 milliliters of baboon bone marrow cells into my arteries and hope to engraft baboon cells into my bone marrow. The experiment was designed to try to find a way to stimulate my immune system to fight off HIV. At the time, I was fairly close to death with AIDS.
What was why was a baboon's marrow cells chosen as opposed to another animal or another primate?
The scientists that I was working with chose to use baboon bone marrow cells because those cells are naturally resistant to HIV infection. We were hoping that perhaps those cells could confer or teach my immune system about possibly being resistant as well.
What were the results?
The results were short-lived. We only had engraftment for a few weeks. However, my health improved rather dramatically. And right now, they're in the process of writing a paper on it. They're almost finished with the paper, finally. I think I can attribute the improvement in my health more to the effects of the chemotherapy than the bone marrow itself. However, one outcome of the experiment was, which was one of the reasons that there's so much controversy going on now, there was concern about whether or not I was going to get a baboon disease of some type. And so far, they haven't found any, and they've been looking real hard. And as a result of this, a lot of cross-species research is probably going to go forward.
Jeff, how did you get to be the one to get this very experimental baboon transplant?
Well, as it turned out, I was one of the few people who actually qualified for the protocol. It was very difficult to qualify for it. You had to be extremely sick and almost dead, but also not having been infected with certain types of microbes that they didn't want on board. And I didn't have them. And I also knew about the protocol. I had worked on developing the protocol, and I'm an activist, and I know how to fight to get something approved, so it was a perfect match.
Why did you want to volunteer for this? Because I think some scientists were guessing that this treatment stood as good a chance of killing you as it did of helping you.
At the time that I did the treatment, well, we were just learning that protease inhibitors might even help. I had already failed those drugs, so it was a life-and-death decision.
Mm-hmm.
I was almost dead the month before we did. In fact, it was ironic because many of our doctors were told that by scientists, by people opposing this, that I was far too sick to undergo such a dramatic procedure. And then others told us that I was far too healthy to undergo this procedure. But as it turned out, it was just about right.
What warnings were you given in advance?
I was specifically warned in advance in signed consent forms around the dangers and the risks to my life. I was told that it could be as high as a 50% chance that I would be killed. I'm an activist. I believe that action equals life, so I'm going to go for it, and I did. I was also given a lot of briefings about the fact that I could, in this very early stage of this type of science, I could pick up an animal disease. So I was carefully informed of that possible risk. And then I agreed to come in and be checked on a monthly basis for a long period of time so they could make sure that that didn't happen.
I think the idea of animal-to-human transplants is still so new and experimental that people really wonder, well, you know, do you feel any different? Do you think about animals differently if there's been an attempt to save your life with an animal transplant? And I'm wondering, you know, if you felt affected that way at all?
Well, yes, we were definitely, there's one thing I did not realize at the beginning of this protocol was I didn't understand how deeply entrenched and subconscious and deep-seated is this feeling among human beings that the human species should not be adulterated with animal components. And it was after the first year having done this transplant when I still continued to hear people joke about that my friends lived in the zoo. And, of course, that I like to eat bananas, and that whenever they saw a monkey, they would look at me and giggle. And at first, you know, these jokes were just kind of fun, and I didn't mind. But after a while, I realized that we were tapping into something here that's really deep. Humans and animals should not mix. That's what people think. So when we start making products out of animals that then live and survive in humans to keep us alive, are we not creating some mythological character? Are we not creating the chimera, the centaur, the part human, part animal myth? And it's a taboo that we're crossing. And I really think the bigger barrier here that we're facing on cross-species research is not just the science, but it is that myth, that taboo, and the feeling that people have, and it's almost a subconscious feeling that they have.
And did you ever have that feeling at all?
After I received baboon bone marrow transplant, I went through the realization and the exploration of my own feelings and realized that perhaps I was now part animal and part monkey at that. And frankly, it was an unusual experience. I mean, I had to get used to the fact. So yes, the taboo was built into me as well. Now I got used to it and it's no big deal. But, you know, I'm still hearing the jokes. And it leads me to believe that we're breaking through a much larger barrier here than just some scientific concerns. And I think that's really what's going on.
I think the greatest fear that some scientists have about animal-to-human transplants is the fear that an animal virus that humans cannot catch now might be bred in humans if animal cells or animal organs are transplanted into humans. So the fear with a procedure like the one you had would be that a baboon virus that humans couldn't get now might be bred in a human body if baboon cells are transplanted into the human. Was this a concern of yours when you had the transplant?
No, that's not my understanding of the science at all. And I've studied the science for a long time before I went forward with the procedure. The way I understand the science is, well, you're trying to refer to something called recombination, and that is when a virus that's a benign virus or a virus that doesn't hurt people gets in and then can recombine with human DNA and form a new supervirus, sort of like in the movie Outbreak with Dustin Hoffman. That is really considered to be an infinitesimal risk. That's a very, very low risk. The thing that I was more concerned about was getting an unknown baboon virus, one that they had not yet detected. See, we knew what we had going in. And the risk was that we picked up something that we did not now, or at that time, did not yet know how to detect. So that's why I had to agree to be followed for some time as they were able to detect and find new baboon viruses. And they have never found any of the new viruses. The animals we used were very clean. They were raised in captivity, and they were clean of most viruses. Of the known viruses the baboon had, Epstein-Barr virus is almost identical to the human Epstein-Barr virus, which I already had. So, you know, in terms of risk with me, it was carefully quantified, and we had a good idea about what we were doing. Now, if you want to talk about this pathological risk, let's just talk about it for a minute. I mean, first of all, the virus has to be infectious within the animal. Then the virus has to be able to be transmitted into the human through an organ or cell delivery system. Then that virus has to be able to survive in a foreign environment, in a human immune system, and somehow become infectious within that human immune system. Then if it becomes infection within a human's immune system, then it has to be infectious enough to be infected to another human's immune system. And each time you take one of those steps, each time you go over that next bridge of risk, or the what-if factor, gets the chances and the risk of this gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Several virologists have already come out and said that. There is a risk. It's a very small risk. But it's not like we're going to be transplanting cells into people who aren't going to be told what the risk is. and people who aren't going to be told how to have safe sex and how not to transmit a bloodborne virus. And again, we're not talking about aerosolized viruses, viruses that you can sneeze on somebody.
Were you given any cautionary advice about things not to do so as to make sure you couldn't possibly spread a virus to somebody else?
Of course. I'm a person who lives with HIV. I already have a virus I don't want to spread to somebody else. So as a result, I'm well aware of the type of procedures and the type of protections you have to take so that you don't transmit this virus. So I'm a natural to get this type of research. I already have a virus.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, for me right now, and when I look at the way the science is being done, is that the government and others who are the enemies of the science are trying to stop our science from going forward. And by the way, xenogeneic research, cross-species research, isn't just bone marrow transplants, and it isn't just organs. It's something called biologics. Biologics are living medical products. These are living cell tools that can help us in many ways fight many diseases. And they form one tool that's called a monoclonal antibody. The monoclonal antibody is a valuable tool that scientists use, and a lot of these antibodies are derived from the murine model. They come from mice. So because these antibodies, which can change a cell receptor on a cell so that it can do its job differently or perhaps not reject an organ or somehow alter our immune system, because those antibodies are derived from animal models, there is this fear that they too could possibly be contaminated by an unknown virus or a vectored virus. This is the situation now where we're not just talking about cross-species research and organs and bone marrow transplants. We're talking about a huge field of science here and possible cures for cancer and cross HLA bone marrow transplants, heart transplants from non-matching donors. There's all kinds of implications that are now being held up because of this one what if. And frankly, you know, to get to the root of the matter, how is it that these viruses could be transmitted if we got one in a patient? And the answer is they're bloodborne viruses. They could be transmitted if they did get through sexual contact. How do we stop viruses from transmitting sexually? Condoms. We know how to do that. We know how to do that in AIDS. We've already shown that we can have a major impact. So I'm tired of hearing people say, oh, well, you could unleash another virus like AIDS. The equivalent of that would be the first 10 people who were ever infected by HIV would have to be in our protocol, signed a consent form, taught how to use condoms, carefully monitored every month, and told that they already had the virus. If that had been the situation at the start of AIDS, AIDS never would have happened. So we're talking about a controlled group of individuals and an experiment. We're not talking about mass application to the general population.
But still, I mean, do you object to the idea of proceeding slowly with caution in something that is so new?
I think we should proceed slowly with caution. I do not think we should stop the science in moratoriums, which is what people are trying to do. And again, the answer here lies with the patient. And you vilify the patients. I mean, you say the patients could start this plague. The patients could have these viruses. You're asking me about my personal training that I was giving, you know, concern that perhaps I wasn't even told that I could transmit a virus. The answer here is really with the patients. The patients need to be informed and taught about how to have safe sex, and we're not going to transmit these viruses. And those circumstances where a virus could get through are very, very infinitesimally small. So it's only going to be a rare case that this is going to happen in the first place. If everybody's using condoms, there shouldn't be any problems.
What have you been told about at what point you cease to be at risk of any baboon virus?
The enemies of this research and the virologists who are against it refuse to admit that I might ever not have a baboon virus. In other words, politically, they cannot say that, yes, we believe Mr. Getty does not have any viruses. Because when the day that they say that is the day that they lost the debate, is the day that we proved that we could do xeno research and follow someone long term and find out that, yes, they did not have a virus. So they're never going to ever let that go. So as a result, politically, nobody can ever declare me to be clean of viruses, even though they can't find any in me.
Jeff, you say that, you know, people are concerned about transferring viruses from animals to humans, but it hasn't happened, so why are they so worried? But the research is still so new that just because it hasn't happened yet doesn't mean that it can't happen or that it won't happen.
I think that if you really spent the time to read on this stuff and enlighten yourself, you might not come up with the same angle. I spent a long time studying it before I came to the conclusions that I did. People have been in contact with animals and animal husbandry for thousands of years. We are continuously being exposed to animal blood and being bitten by animals and having the same routes of transmission. For God's sakes, we're having sex with animals. And if there was a huge amount of pathogens that were going to infect the human race, we would already be seeing these. We're seeing a limited amount of this stuff coming through. Occasionally, a flu gets through or something like HIV gets through. But it's not a common practice. It's not commonly occurring when you look at how many times we are being exposed to animal blood and pathogen. I mean, we eat it. We eat it half-cooked.
You know that flu that recently jumped from chickens to humans and there were thousands of chickens that were slaughtered? Did that give you pause?
No. You know, you know what? I really think that you didn't just listen to a word I just said, and you know, I think that's enough. I mean, really, how many chickens have we eaten in the last 100 years? How many chickens' heads have we cut off and had their blood pour on us? 50 billion? We get one chicken to cause a flu to transmit through to some people in Hong Kong, and now all animal research must stop. I mean, these are things that are very, very rare and remote occurrences.
My guest is Jeff Getty. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Jeff Getty. 2 years ago, he received a bone marrow transplant from a baboon to strengthen his immune system, which was knocked out by AIDS. Were you confronted by any animal rights activists, and are they involved in this issue now?
Oh, God. You want to go there? While I was at the hospital, I received some 350 letters of love and support from all over the world and 4 death wishes from animal rights activists. It's irrational. I mean, we're eating animals every day. I mean, I just had one for lunch. And frankly, to think that we couldn't use animal cells or organs to keep people alive but still eat them is ridiculous. And I don't get the point at all here.
You have made yourself a voluntary guinea pig, in a way, for several procedures. You've taken experimental AIDS drugs for years, mm-hmm. and you helped smuggle in certain AIDS drugs when they were...
in a pinata.
Uh-huh. Why? I mean, a lot of people would say you've really exposed yourself to a lot of risk. I mean, I realize the greater risk was dying, but... Tell me why you've taken so many risks for so many years with experimental therapies, and including animal to human transplants, which is perhaps the most dramatic of all the risks that you've taken.
Yeah, but there was many other things that I've done. I've transplanted cells from 2 of my sisters directly into my body, and they were not blood matching, and people thought that was going to kill me as well. I've had HIV most of my adult life. I'm out 18 years here, folks, and... The one thing that I have learned through the 1980s, when there was no therapies, in the early 1990s too, is that the only way I was going to stay alive was going to be by taking action. You talk to any cancer patient who's been told that they only have 6 months to live, and now they're here 10 years later. They're alive because they took action. I read Bernie Siegel's books, you know, Love, Medicine, and Miracles, and I got off my butt and started fighting. And every time I took action to get something new or to obtain another drug, sometimes the drugs helped me, sometimes they didn't. But I can tell you right now, I wouldn't be alive now if I hadn't fought as hard as I did.
As an activist and as someone who has been the recipient of an animal transplant, how would you like to see government guidelines change for animal-to-human transplants?
Well, I told the New York Times recently that I think I have the answer to the whole problem. And the answer is that we're not bringing in behavioral science. We're not bringing in social science. I mean, the real risk of danger here, the real risk of infection to the general population is going to only happen when we have uninformed patients or people who do not know how to protect themselves so they don't transmit a virus. So it's really boiling down to sex. And it seems like we don't want to talk about sex. And even in the protocols that I signed the consent forms to, sex was only briefly mentioned. But it's the most important part of this. I really think that if we design protocols that screen out sex addicts, screen out drug addicts and alcoholics, people that might slip up, and then have everybody in those protocols sat down in a room for a half a day and taught how to use condoms and taught safe sex techniques, and then told that they just must assume that they have a virus like HIV for a long period of time, then we can go forward with these experiments and find out. Now, if it turns out that xeno research really is a key to saving thousands of lives and it's going to be a widespread application, then we can develop through cloning animal models that are completely clean of disease, and we know that we don't have these risky pathogens floating around out there. And that'll be in decades to come.
How is your health now?
My health has been fairly good for the last 2 years. I mean, it hasn't been a bed of roses, but I'm able to keep my weight on. However, my immune system remains pretty much shattered, and I am looking for new drugs and possibly new ways to stay alive, including bone marrow transplants.
So what new experimental therapies are you still hoping to try?
We're looking at a couple of ideas. You know, we found that some human beings are naturally resistant to HIV also. So why not try to do a bone marrow transplant from one of them to someone like me to see if we can, you know, teach that immunity to the other immune system?
Jeff Getty, he received a bone marrow transplant from a baboon 2 years ago. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.